And we're thanking Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon for, of course, for presenting the podcasts and all of Ira's work on joebucksfan.com. Get knockout savings during the Summer Sales Challenge at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. That's right. We're challenging all other dealers to give you our lowest prices and payments on a certified pre-owned Cadillac like a 2015 SRX for only $25,985. Plus, every certified Cadillac comes with a 6-year warranty, roadside assistance, and more. The Summer Sales Challenge is on. Visit EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Plus tax, tag, title, and dealer fees. See a dealer for limited warranty details. EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com is the place to start. And this is your final chance to get made-to-move clearance savings at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. Brian Danahy, general manager, he's got the final countdown of the Ed Morris Summer Sales Challenge. Don't miss out on the 2017 CTS sedan, just $329. It's all coming to an end. Rush to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorriscadillactampa.com. CTS courtesy vehicle, approved credit, 39-month lease, 10K annual miles. All the details are at the dealership. The offer expires at the end of the month. It's hard to believe summer is ending, but the great summer offers continue at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Check out their websites to get it all started. So there you have it, Mr. Kaufman, Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. So much to talk about today, Ira. I'm all fired up. We're recording early. We're actually in your hometown here. This is a little more exciting opportunity here on the podcast.
Got a nice umbrella. It's like we're at the beach over here, Stephen.
Yeah, except we've got no women, and thankfully we're clothed.
And your picturesque scene is of U.S. 19, Mr. Isbitz. But the summer sales continue, my man, at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Walk in, walk around. Somebody's going to help you answer all your questions. And believe me, they'll work with you no matter what your social status, whether you're a Buck fan or not. Steve, they'll put you in a Cadillac.
There you go. I love you just love saying that. I know when you love saying, hey, they'll work with you. It's like Brooklyn. It's like going back to Brooklyn. Hey,
let's work a deal.
Let's work a deal. Of course, we're so thankful to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. We'll talk more about them later. I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeKemper is joining us from JoeBucksFan.com. And Ira, so much to talk about. A lot going on in the world of the Bucks, but I have to go right to your sage wisdom on a very important topic since it went national. And since you are the Tampa Bay area's primary pipeline to Team Glazer, Prickly Pete Prisco, the senior NFL writer at CBS Sports, threw out a tweet on Monday and claimed that, well, don't blame Jason Light necessarily for the Roberto Aguayo pick. It's an ownership call. What do you make of that?
What I make of it, Lee, is shame on you, Prickly Pete. You know better. Stick to promoting Tony Boselli for the Hall of Fame. You're on decent ground there because, hey, the guy made the Final 10 last year, which was very stunning, his first year of eligibility, and he had a short career. So, Pete, on the face of it, that makes no sense. Are we to believe, gentlemen, that Joel Bryan and Ed Glazer got together in a conference call and said, hey, let's call Jason Light and sell him on the idea of taking Roberto Aguayo. We love this kid from Florida State. We don't care. We need a kicker. He's the man. He never missed a field goal from under 40 yards. Come on, gentlemen. What I think is the much more likely scenario is Jason Light and his scouts made up their mind. We're going after Roberto Aguayo. He's the best kicking prospect in their mind that they had ever scouted. Now, we know what happened in the aftermath, but look at the mindset going into that draft. This is the best kicking prospect we've ever scouted. We want this guy. We're going to go get him. We're going to do what we have to do to get him. And as Jason Light is prone to do, smart man, he always lets the Glazers know what's going on at One Buck Place. You don't know any draft night surprises when you're going to trade up for a kicker in the second round. You're not going to pull that on Ed Glazer at the moment of conception. So he told them, in advance what was going on, and the Glazers signed off on it. If they didn't sign off, Aguayo wouldn't have been a Buck. They said, Jason, we trust you. You've got a good track record for drafts. Go do what you think is right. That's a far cry, gentlemen, from Prickly Pete Prisco, the implications of that tweet. I don't know where he was going on that, but to think that the Glazers were the driving force before on Roberto Aguayo, That's just nonsense.
Well, 2 days before that, Ira, which I thought was interesting, Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times had an article where he used the line, "It always felt like someone else's hand was on the scale." And he hinted it was Winston, perhaps the Glazers.
The Winston thing's been shot down thoroughly. Why? Because of a Florida State connection? Steve, you got to have more than that. They didn't draft Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook's a lot more high profile than Roberto Aguayo.
And much more needed.
Cook.
And what the hell does Jameis Winston know about kicking? Come on. He's a kicking guru. All of a sudden, he knows what about kicking. But, Ira, we need to go in an important direction to dive deeper into your sageness. Is that a word?
I don't think so.
No.
But use it anyway.
Sagacity? Can we call it sagacity?
Sagacity.
I'll look that up when I get home. All right. Ira, it is a strong tweet. There are a lot of implications. Fans read that. National thing. It's been talked about.
And they think, hey, the Glazers are interfering too
much. Glazers are interfering. It's a bad look for the Glazers. Bad look for Jason Light if you're the kind of person who thinks, well, who would leak this other than Light to maybe save his own ass and to look good in front of his peers and to...
Or his owners.
Although I don't know why I don't know about the owners, but it's interesting.
So you're right. On first glance, you would think it came from Jason Light. You think about it, you realize it didn't come from
Jason Light.
There's
a lot of ways to look at it. So where your sage wisdom comes in is this. Should Light have responded to this publicly? Should the Glazers have responded to this publicly and said this is a preposterous, either one of them or both?
My understanding, gents, is that the Glazers are laughing this off. They're not putting any stock into it. And why? Because they've dealt with Jason Light for 3 years. They trust him. Now, he is in a contract year, and we'll see what happens. Some people are wondering why he doesn't already have an extension. He's got a pretty sterling record, notwithstanding Aguayo and Austin Seferian Jenkins. It's still, they have core young players. Mm-hmm. When for 10 years they didn't have core young players that you were in a rush to sign into their second contracts. That's what it's all about. Mm. And Quan Alexander is going to be taken care of, and Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith. They didn't have guys like that. Let's face it. And Jameis Winston, of course.
When you say taken care of, you mean like an Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon?
Look at you, Isbits.
Well, you said they take care of them. Take care of them. All right, go ahead.
I don't think the Glazers need to respond publicly, Lee. I don't think Jason Light needs to respond publicly to a tweet that came and went without a whimper. Mm-hmm. It's silly on the face of it. I'm not sure Prisco even talked to Light before he tweeted it. he probably should have if he did.
Oh, of course.
And it doesn't make any sense, Steve, because the Glazers are involved owners. They're not absentee owners. I'm not saying that. I've had other people tell me they are involved. And they want to be kept up to date. There's no question about that.
That's only fair.
Wouldn't you want to be?
Yeah, that's only fair. It's their money.
To think that they were the impetus behind drafting Roberto Aguayo, that's one of the silliest things I've ever heard.
Ira, I got to ask you this. The only time I ever remember any member of the Glazer family reacting to news, and I guess in the times we live in, that tweet from Prisco is news. The only time it was something completely over the top, it was when Dan Celio tried to make a connection between the Glazer family and Bernie Madoff and a Ponzi scheme, and it was within hours, not days, hours, and Joe Glazer had a forceful response.
That was a business story, Steve, and that got their attention. Remember when Miko made that unfortunate remark? I think she was talking about Stephen Ross and the Dolphins, but she made a bigger point, and she used on some unfortunate language.
It was the
GM. It could have been perceived as anti-Semitic language.
The former Jets GM. What's his name?
Tannenbaum.
Tannenbaum, yeah.
And the Glazers, a lot of people thought, hey, that's a shot. What are the Glazers going to do? They let it go. They didn't get involved. So, like Lee says, they very rarely respond. Very rarely.
Yeah.
And I don't think this reaches the point of where you have to make a statement.
Yeah, like a Bernie Madoff accusation.
And going back to Miko's tweet, it had nothing to do with the Glazers.
That's right.
in any form. She basically said the Dolphins owner hires his Jewish friend buddies for his organization. I mean, it had nothing. It wasn't a Glazer thing, whereas the other two were. But they didn't respond to that either, even though people tried to link it to the organization.
Yes.
And even though Tom Jones, the Times columnist, said the Glazers were irresponsible for not responding, which is just ludicrous. He was blaming the freaking victims. If he thought it was so bad, then he thought the Glazers were victimized. I hated that. So
maybe Prisco was trying to take some pressure off Jason Light because you know, some of the national guys have weighed in. They weighed in when they drafted Aguayo. They're certainly going to weigh in when they waive him, right, Lee?
Who didn't weigh in?
Yeah, and, you know, maybe Prisco's trying to throw a lifeline. But in doing so, Steve, as you astutely pointed out, he didn't help Jason Light on the face of it. He didn't help him.
No, well, I mean, of course, Jason Light is going to get a call. If this thing totally came out of the blue with zero credibility whatsoever, of course that would generate a phone call from the Glazers saying, hey, Jason, why is this out there? We're not accusing you of anything, but what the hell's going on?
What do you know about
this? Right, what do you know about this? Who might be leaking this, or what's the veracity here? Big word for you, Aaron. All right, so that's that. So you don't think the Glazers should respond?
I don't believe it. That was Jason Light's pick. He screwed it up. He admits it. It was a gaffe. Move on.
Do you think Light should have responded by calling the sage of Tampa Bay sports saying, Ira, write a column that Prisco's an idiot and this didn't happen?
Well, you know how you respond, Lee? You call Prisco. You call Prisco and say, hey, how about a retraction? How about clarifying what the heck you're doing? It's not true, Prickly Pete. It's not true. That's what I would do if I was Jason Light.
And maybe that happened.
And maybe that happened.
Maybe we'll see.
We're still waiting for the retraction, though, Lee.
All right.
And if you know Prickly Pete, like you and I, like I do, you can't win an argument with that guy. He's knowledgeable.
Yeah.
But he's very, very sure of his convictions. You cannot win an argument. And believe me, I've tried. I argue Rondé Barber or John Lynch. And you can't get any, especially John Lynch.
He doesn't think much of Lynch?
You get nowhere. You get absolutely nowhere.
He's not a Hall of Fame voter, just to clarify.
And he is not.
Right. So maybe one day he'll reach your status, Sira.
But he's pushing Tony Boselli. And he used to cover the Jaguars.
Yeah.
So I understand that.
All right, Ira.
And by the way, Rick Goslin from Hall of Fame Talk and Hall of Fame Network, he just wrote a story. I don't know if you guys
saw it. And Rondé Barber.
Each guy is assigned as three guys. And they're each assigned to maybe three guys. Make the case for so-and-so in the Hall of Fame. Rick Goslin, who I know for 40 years, very influential on that committee. He got the assignment of Rondé Barber. He made a case. It was a decent case. He sent it to me. And I said, some good points, Rick, but you also could have mentioned that he continues to be the prototype for a position that is growing in prominence in the NFL, which is that slot cornerback. Mm-hmm. Rondé did it better than anybody. He did it first more than anybody. Goslin didn't have much of that in that story. So believe me, if Rondé gets on that Final 15, and why wouldn't he in Minneapolis in February, I'll be stressing that point plenty. Sound of Music,
my
friend.
Yeah, what the hell is this in the background here?
And no, Bette Midler was not in that movie, Isbit, so don't even mention her name or Streisand.
I'll lay off Bette Midler, Ira. I know it's a sensitive subject for you. Now let's go to Hard Knocks. Tuesday night, episode 2. Ira, you're sitting there watching it. Your sage thoughts?
It doesn't play in Peoria, gentlemen. It doesn't play in Peoria. Two things. One, if you're in the Bay Area and you're any kind of Buck fan or any kind of NFL fan, you're going to watch it if you have HBO. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I'm going to watch the next three episodes. You're going to watch it. But from a broader perspective, a national perspective, I would have turned it off after episode 1. I ain't coming back for episode 2. If I'm in St. Louis, Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine, I'm not coming back. And it's a pay-per-view, I'm not getting it just for Hard Knocks bucks. I think they're missing some compelling storylines. I don't think they've hit a home run. They haven't scored a touchdown. I don't care about Gerald McCoy's dance or his man cave. I don't care about Riley Bullock, who's still a long shot to make the team. I don't care about McLean's artwork. I don't care if this guy's Pablo Picasso. Give me some football, DeKemper.
Well, I think you're expecting Hard Knocks not to be Hard Knocks. This is what Hard Knocks is. Now, I'll grant you the last episode I thought it was lukewarm. The element about Winston scolding the camp meet offensive lineman.
That was good.
I thought that was superb.
It was.
The camaraderie between the quarterbacks I thought was forced. The element, and I know it's a staple of Hard Knocks when Aguayo was being told you're out of here. I thought that was so drawn out it wasn't funny. I was, like anybody else, I wanted to see that. But I thought that could have been condensed to 30 seconds, much less 2 minutes. I thought that was way blown out. Love the Miko element. I mean, I think you're expecting Hard Knocks not to be Hard Knocks. This is what Hard Knocks does. And compared to the Rams, this is the Godfather trilogy. I mean, the Rams was so ungodly boring. It was horribly boring.
But they don't have
any compelling figures.
Steven, can I get 2.5 minutes with Doug Martin? talking about what's going on with Doug Martin and the suspension.
Fair point.
How he let his team down.
Fair point.
And what his teammates say about Doug Martin behind closed doors. It's never even mentioned. I don't think we've heard the word suspension in 2 hours. Have we?
I'm not surprised, Ira. I told you in advance I didn't think Quan Alexander would show up. I didn't think Ali Marpet would show
Looks
up.
Like you're right.
I didn't think that's very early in the show. But Doug Martin, that's old news. If no one's talking about it at $1, why would Hard Knocks necessarily go there? Because they're not going to get
it's one of the few juicy storylines.
Well, I don't think the Bucks. Remember who's producing this? NFL Films. It's not an independent company. Like Mike Florio pointed out, if it was an independent company, this would be a whole lot more like Last Chance U, which is superb on
and
Netflix.
And Steve, like I said, if I'm a Buck Brass, I love this show. This is a fantastic show. Give me more and more and more.
Yeah, well, again, NFL Films produces that. And as you put Ed Sable, you got Ed Sable in the Hall of Fame. What was the hallmark of Ed Sable? He never put a player in an embarrassing position. So you're expecting...
The shield.
You're expecting Hard Knocks not to be Hard Knocks. You're expecting NFL Films not to be NFL Films.
Stop calling it Hard Knocks. How about soft and fuzzy?
Yeah, I mean, there's still time. Plenty of stuff can evolve. And go ahead, Lee.
Oh, yeah, but Quan Alexander, you mentioned it in your column Wednesday morning about Quan Alexander. Like Steve said, I never expected him to me, you know, okay, on the football field as a linebacker, he's a compelling figure. You've seen him in the locker room. He's a wonderful guy. He's got a passion for football. You get him off that football field, he's nondescript. There's no personality there. I wouldn't say he's an introvert, but he leans that way, and he's just the opposite on the field. So I never expected him to feature Quan Alexander because there's nothing to feature unless you're going to go football, and they're not Hard Knocks is on an X's and O's show.
Yeah, they might still go football, might get to like some of his morning meetings with Mike Smith or something like that, but we'll see.
I think Jameis is coming off.
I got to say this. I got to take a shot at Jameis, and one I have to play contrarian a little bit here, but
him contrarian.
But it is. I do feel it genuinely as a point. I'm not just playing devil's advocate. I never do that here on the podcast.
Never to Ira.
Here's the
there's a smile.
So you two like the when Jameis went over and talked to the can't meet offensive lineman saying Jameis saying I'm glad you guys are laughing. Your core Ryan Griffin's hurt. It's telling, but. Let me ask you something, Ira. Ryan Griffin was not carted off the field. He walked off the field himself. How the hell is a camp meet lineman sitting on the thing supposed to understand the injury to Ryan Griffin?
Well, whether it was a concussion or a shoulder injury, the man's injured.
How are they supposed to know he's injured?
Well, on the flip side, how do they know he wasn't injured for the season?
He didn't go down.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go down.
He got hit.
They showed the video of Ryan Griffin. He gets up.
Oh, he got up, yeah.
He walks around. No, he didn't go down. He gets up.
He didn't get down on the tackle.
He got tackled, but he gets up. He walks around. And
he moves his shoulder around.
And then he moves around, and he waves.
What about when he walked to the locker room?
And walks off.
What about when he walked to the locker room?
Doesn't mean that they saw him. That's what I'm saying. How does Jameis know that those guys knew that Griffin is injured?
Might have been a little snap judgment.
Might have been a snap judgment there. So I have
or
to say that.
Or creative editing.
Well, exactly.
The thing I liked about that was, you know, Jameis has a standard. We all know that he's, you know, how many times we've got to hear he's the leader of the team, face of the franchise. He went up to these guys who slap jockeys. There's another word I want to use. But we have
yucking it up.
We have proper sponsors. I want to keep it clean here. I want to keep it G-rated. They were sitting there yucking up. Winston has standards like, look, guys, this is our job. This is our careers. This is not, you know, recreation flag football on Wednesday nights. Go have a couple beers. If you expect to make this team, you got to take this seriously. You can't be yucking it up and, you know, planning on drilling the prom queen next week.
His affection for his teammates, Steve, you can't argue that. It's genuine.
Well,
and it comes across.
I agree with you, but I'm going to argue it on this point. One of the things that Mike Bajakian tells Jameis and Dirk Cutter, something goes wrong, snap and clear, move on, stay focused, stay out of that negativity. And guys on the football field, the guy gets hurt, they got to move on. They can't be dwelling and thinking about this and that. You know what? It happened to Cecil Shorts last year. The Bucks didn't crumble. You know, when
they won that game.
You know, they won that game. I understand playing for a guy and staying focused, but I think Jameis, that's a little bit overboard.
I understand your point.
In my opinion. Now, I'm going to roll that into something else we saw on Hard Knocks, and I still want to hear everything you want to talk about, Ira. But Chris Baker is on Hard Knocks. And his primary role on the show that we saw featured last night was Baker, we now learn that he is constantly heckling the kickers, getting right up behind them, heckling them, essentially rooting against them playfully, but still rooting against them and cheering when they miss. What do you think of that?
I would hope, Lee, for Baker's sake, that it's some grand plan in his mind to put pressure on the kicker that, you know, if they can't handle that, how are they going to handle a game-winning kick? And if that's what he's thinking, maybe I give him a pass.
You hope, yeah.
But I'm not sure it is, Lee.
Well, obviously they're giving him a pass. Otherwise, they wouldn't have. How many clips did we see of that? How many different kicks? What, four or five kicks that we know of? So if that rubbed the coaches the wrong way, it wouldn't be happening. But like you, Ira, you hope that's his desire, his
with
drive.
With some of his antics and some of his work habits, he better be a heck of a player this fall. Or I'm going to be all over Swaggy. I'll tell you that right now. He better be a major contributor.
You're telling me Jameis Winston sets the tone. Jameis Winston is not a guy who would ever heckle his kickers like that. So who's running this locker room? Dirk Cutter sat on your podcast, Ira, and said, you know what? A big thing is how J.J. Wilcox and DeSean Jackson and Chris Baker blend into the locker room. He said that on your podcast. Well, where's, you know, maybe Cutter wants the locker room to police Baker. Maybe he feels that he's got to wait on that. But does Jameis want guys rooting against his kickers?
You know, Lee, I'm all for having fun. Jameis Winston has fun. But you also have to be serious about your craft. And it's not coming across for Baker.
Well, that's what the point
I made. It's not coming across.
And that's the point I made about the camp meet offensive line. You got to take your craft seriously.
You know, let's not be premature. You know, it's mid-August. Mm-hmm. But from what I've seen so far, he's got a ways to go.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'll throw you a crazy hypothetical. If in one of those Baker scenes, if Nick Folk walked up to him and said, "You MF-er, who the hell
worry
are you?
About what you're doing.
Who the hell are you rooting against us as kickers? You know, why don't you move your fat ass, blah, blah, blah." Everybody would be now the biggest Nick Folk fan
that's
in the
right.
world.
That's
so
right.
There you go. But that's a hypothetical.
You know, is Nick Folk rooting for Baker to miss a tackle on Jacquizz Rodgers?
Mm-hmm.
You know. It was bizarre. It was a little bizarre. He seemed to delight in the fact that they missed.
Yeah.
You know, it was a big it was a big joke.
Wide left, wide right.
Guys are playing for their jobs, families.
It's one thing to try to replicate distractions, but they have. If you're going to do that, it's got to be realistic.
That's crowd noise. Yeah,
right.
Fine.
Stand off to the side and heckle. Stand where the defensive lineman would be, but not right behind the guy. No kicker has a guy 2 yards behind him over his shoulder chirping in his ear. That's just
Lee, one quick point that I thought was a good clip, and I think again telling. I think that's the word. And you guys, look, you guys know how I feel about Mike Evans. I'll say it again: best player on the team. All due respect, 93, best player on the team. Showed up again in a little, you know, stupid, meaningless preseason game. The guy was unstoppable in the first quarter. He sat down after those two plays near the goal line, fizzled out. Not particularly good throws by Jameis Winston. Did Mike Evans say, "Oh man, if that was a better thrown ball, I would have had it"? No. Evans is very, very tough on himself. He thinks he should get every football. And there was a crossing pattern early where the ball was thrown behind him.
Yep.
Remember?
Yep.
And Cutter said to Winston, "You know, you got to lead the guy."
Yeah.
I had a problem with. I don't know if Rondé chimed in, but Chris Myers, when that play happened, when that throw was behind him, I think they were blaming Evans. They said, "Oh, you got to catch that ball." No, that would have been a fantastic catch. It was an easy throw.
Yeah.
It was a little 7-yard flip, but the timing was off. It was a bad throw by Winston. I love Evans' self-examination. You know, Winston's tough on himself. I think Evans is even tougher on himself. He's in line for a spectacular season.
What was that, by the way, that scene with him and DeSean Jackson? That was I don't know what that was
in there. Stuff on the remember when they were talking about LeBron and
not so much that it was like they were trying to catch a ball over each other and that was like about a minute and a half.
Yeah.
I was like, what was that? You know that. So that, I mean, I agree with you, Ira. That could have had more juice. But you and I are coming at it from different angles. Like I think you don't expect
a lot of juice. That's the difference.
Well. Yes and no. Here's the thing. The juice you expect, I think I said this in the last podcast, the juice you expect to see as NFL film showing Adam Humphries trolling for chicks at the Undertow. You expect to see some no-name linebacker knocking off a dry cleaners. You expect to see some backup defensive lineman tearing apart a Wendy's because they ran out of Frosties. None of that's going to be shown on NFL Films Hard Knocks.
I've seen Ira tear up a Wendy's when they run out of Frosties. But no chocolate. Come on.
I want juice, Isbits. I want hey, I'm paying $20 a month for HBO. I want juice. Let's go.
All right, Ira, other impressions, Hard Knocks, standouts?
Well, I see glimpses. Maybe you guys don't see it, but I see glimpses.
Glimpses.
I see glimpses of the stick carriers on the fringes. I saw the chance for Jameis Winston,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I saw a great response by Jameis Winston. Ryan Griffin, I mean, I want to see that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we were all there that day.
Sure.
And HBO was there in force for takeover day. How often something like that happen at an NFL training camp? We've never seen it before at the Bucs.
Never.
Cutter said never seen it before. And all he said, I've been to thousands of training camps days. Never seen it before.
What was Cutter's quote? The only thing he didn't like about it is because Ira Fulton got a bigger applause than he did.
And your boy Isbits did a little research and found out who is Ira Fulton, young man.
No, we mentioned his
last
thought
he made the name up.
No, we mentioned this last time. He's an 80-something-year-old
philanthropist
in Arizona.
Let me get this out right now. I'm no philanthropist over there.
Just a philanderer. That's it.
You know, they got to show Cutter holding up that life-size picture. They got to show it, and the fans going crazy. They absolutely have to show it. The commission has to, you know, get his minute in the sun. It's juice, baby, and that's what I'm looking for. Again, if you're outside of the Bay Area, are you tuning in for episode 3? Well, maybe if there's an old Dick Van Dyke episode and that's your only option, you know, you're going to do it. But I'm looking beyond the Bay Area because we're all going to, you know, we're all going to tune in for any crumb, any morsel.
Well, I'm like
behind
that,
the pewter curtain.
That Robert McClain, and again, that's Hard Knocks does this, but the Robert McClain was this. Yeah, why'd you put it? It was forced. It was forced.
I couldn't even tell what he was drawing over there. Isbits, was he drawing up a play? Was he drawing up Gerald McCoy as Batman? What's he drawing?
Yeah, it's for everybody's different. I liked it. You know, it was maybe 45 seconds. The guy's an artist.
To me, the McClain element and the quarterback camaraderie, you know, playing ping pong, and that was all forced, I thought.
we're in a nasty mood today. We're in an ornery mood today.
Jameis was a little annoyed when they lost in the ping pong.
He screwed up. He dumped a couple into the net.
Yeah, he clearly doesn't know how to play. I was when I was watching that, Ira.
He's
thinking
holding the racket.
I was thinking Ira's going to challenge him to ping pong because Ira thinks he can beat him.
There you go. That's why it was forced. Even, you know, you could tell Jameis doesn't play ping pong. That was forced.
Yeah. And don't forget the Miko Grimes challenge.
Well, that was great.
Tennis.
Oh, I got to ask you this now. I want you to comment, you know, your sage wisdom. You're the king of Newport Richey. We're in your kingdom here in Newport Richey today. Your thoughts on Miko's road game rituals with Brent?
I tell you what, I wish my wife had the same ritual when I go to a Buck road game. Unfortunately, you know, she's 300 miles away, and I got to talk to her on the phone.
That was
a whole other story. Miko, no holds barred. Yeah, you know, she's not afraid to reveal things about herself. What I think continues to be fascinating is, you know, she has absolutely nothing negative to say about this organization. And that is a sharp, contrast to what happened in Miami when Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, mentioned Miko Grimes by name when he was talking about releasing Brent Grimes. He mentioned her. You know, as a factor.
Well, how about the contrast? You know, Ross says that, and then last night we see the warm embrace between her and Cutter after practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's all good between Brent Grimes. He loves it here. He absolutely loves the organization. And, Steve, let's admit it. If Brent Grimes has anywhere near the season he had in 2016, they can't afford to let him go. I mean, where are these young cornerbacks that are on the rise other than Vernon Hargraves?
Well, that sets you up again. Mr. Smith, Ryan Smith.
Before we get to that, Ira, I thought that funny your little quip about your wife. It was like you were redefining fan retreat. and the next fan retreat, the first fan retreat, go to fanretreat.com.
Look at this angle he's got.
Beautiful.
Fanretreat.com/Miami. That is the Ira Kaufman bash the evening before the Dolphins game in Miramar, Florida, South Florida, at the Hampton Inn there.
Don't tell me that RSVP number continues to rise.
The RSVPs continue to rise. Free food and free beer doesn't hurt. But free IRA, is...
Now, wait a minute. I thought we were charging $20 a head for my little five-minute speech
now,
over
you'll
there,
be
right?
You'll be doing your insider Q&A, revealing all the things you forget that you can't reveal. Just remember, it's a social media day and age, IRA. You're going to be videoed all over the place.
Is this uncensored? Can I go the Pulaski route?
It's completely uncensored. They'll probably have it rolling on Facebook Live is their plan, as well as maybe some other mediums. So you'll be heralded properly and well-fed. But feel free to bring a beet salad. But all the information is fanretreat.com/Miami. Free party. You can RSVP, but you don't have to.
I forgot to ask you about, before you get to Ryan Smith, I say up for Ryan Smith. But one more element about Miko. I thought it was really cool how she'll do research on other teams, and she'll be texting, she admitted this on the show, she'll be texting Brent throughout game day morning anything she could think of to help him get an edge, whether it be strategic, whether it be emotional, what have you. And I thought that was kind of neat. What was your thought of that?
I've also been told, Steve, by a pretty good source, that Miko Grimes tries to communicate with her husband. Let me say this very slowly so our listeners can understand this. Miko Grimes communicates with her husband while the games are in progress, while he's taking his position at cornerback. She's trying to yell out different strategies, and you're out of position because she's sitting in the second row.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal.
Well, that's
interesting. Who else does something like
that?
Well,
you know, as Brett said, he makes sure she has good seats so he can hear her. I know why.
Absolutely.
Now I know why. Good stuff, Ira. That's why your podcast is
now,
so famous.
Now he wants to talk about Ryan Smith. I don't know if the Bucks want to talk about Ryan Smith. Steve, your thoughts on Ryan Smith?
Well, forget about my thoughts for a second.
What? You were in Jacksonville.
I know I was in Jacksonville. It's your podcast. All right. Well, Thursday night is the exhibition game. That shows our age. We always say exhibition. Preseason football.
I got no problem with exhibition.
Back in the day, it was exhibition games. All right. Preseason game, Bucks at Jacksonville on Thursday night. Game two, starters are supposed to play a half or very close to it. And one of those starters, because Brent Grimes is hurt, Abe's... he had his shin stitched up, which we saw some detail on that on Hard Knocks. I saw Brent yesterday. For a while, he didn't even have a bandage on it, and then he did. But he seems just fine.
The smart thing is to sit him.
Yeah, he's just hanging out, traveling with the team. But Ryan Smith, the second-year cornerback, the guy they thought was a safety but isn't, and it seems like he might not be a cornerback either, he is getting all these reps. Because they don't have Hey Jude, Ajay Barema. They don't have Grimes. And they got all these extra reps for corners, and Smith is getting overloaded with reps, and the Bucks pegged him as the backup outside corner, the guy to come in for Grimes or Hargraves. And, look, I wrote last week that he's been bad in practice, very inconsistent, and he always has the coach all over him, and it seems intentional, like he needs the extra coaching up. And in Jacksonville yesterday, it was an absolute horror show. And I was not the only one saying that. Sports Illustrated tweeted out him getting abused in drills.
Sports Illustrated singled out Little Ryan Smith.
Yes.
Andy Benoyer.
No. It was Klemko was on site, so I'm assuming it was Klemko. Him. But I think he had somebody with him, so it might have been their photographer. But he was singled out by Sports Illustrated for getting abused in practice. The Jacksonville newspapers, I forget which one, I think it's First Coast News, in their notebook about the Jaguars, they write about Ryan Smith.
They're supposed to be focusing on the Jacksonville.
I know. Imagine you doing a notebook for the Tribune and you're writing about...
The Dante Fowler did nothing for the Jacks today.
Imagine you working for the Tribune, Ira, and you're writing about a backup cornerback on the Browns getting abused in practice. I mean, that's how much it stood out. And I was next to Rex Ryan at practice. He was there yesterday, and he's great friends with Mike Smith.
Knows a thing or two about defense,
well,
right?
Give him the connection between Mike Smith and Rex Ryan.
Yeah, they coached together in Baltimore. That whole Brian Billick staff, Rex Ryan. Mike Smith was on Ryan's defensive staff. Very tight. Clearly a strong bond there. They talked for a long time afterwards. Even talked during practice, which is very rare for a coach
to
do that.
Rex Ryan singled out Ryan Smith, are you?
Rex Ryan singled out Ryan Smith during practice. And was like, man, that's the guy transitioning from, he said, that's the guy transitioning from safety. Cornerback's a lot easier. He shouldn't be looking like this. And They got their hands full, that kind of stuff. And Ryan, you know, I talked to him specifically. He was talking in general. He likes to talk, as you can imagine, Rex Ryan. he was, you know, sort of waxing about how he hasn't not coached in like 30-something years, always on a football sideline, and his dad a little bit and all that. But he was bad. And he actually got Mike Smith. He was beaten by an undrafted rookie in a 7-on-7 drill deep. And so check this, right? Undrafted rookie. He's beaten badly, about at least a step and a half, two steps. And the deep ball comes, and it was overthrown, but the guy was wide open. And Mike Smith runs up, sprints down the field to where Ryan Smith is, and yells at him, "Where did you think they were going with the ball? What did you think they were going to do? You know, like how could you, like, what were you doing, you know?" And he lost it. He lost it. The frustration boiled over. And Mike Smith, that's not his style all the time for people to see,
that's right.
You know, at least media. We haven't seen that in that vein.
He's not in the habit of embarrassing people in publicly like that.
And then
with the media watching.
And then in the end zone with Rex Ryan watching, he's after Ryan made the comment, he's all over him, "Come on, Rook," you know, and this is Mike Smith calling him Rook. And usually Mike Smith's more peaceful, like, "Let's go, Ryan," and, you know.
More encouraging.
More encouraging. And then Ryan's bad day continued, Ryan Smith. I don't know. I know you didn't see it, Ira, but how much rope is this guy going to get?
Let's not make this a Ryan Smith, you know, bash fest. Let's not. But I'll make this point. Lee, part of the whole situation, in my mind, is how many times Light and Cutter go out of their way to talk up Ryan Smith.
Yeah, for months.
Playing an integral part of the 2017 Bucks.
If
they hadn't done that, then you'd say, well, this guy's a fourth-round pick, and he's struggling, and he may not make the team. And nobody bats an eye, Lee. Yeah. Nobody.
Correct.
Nobody's holding that against Jason Light, you know, whose 2015 draft, you know, is going to go down in franchise history, you know, next to 95 with Brooks and Sapp. But they keep bringing up Ryan Smith's name. Mm-hmm. And my advice to them is to stop bringing up Ryan Smith's name. Let the kid settle in. And if you got to cut him in 2-3 weeks, you cut him. You go with your best 53. They've proven with Aguayo that they are, you know, that draft status doesn't matter when it comes to who's out playing who.
And
if you
got to
go pick up a cornerback after the final cuts are made, you do it. But we're all in agreement. Ryan Smith has not distinguished himself.
I ever brought up something. It clicked in my mind. Well, you're talking about how Smith and Light are always talking about Ryan Smith. And they have been for months.
And Cutter.
What did I say?
You said Smith and Light.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah. Not Mike Smith so much, but Cutter, yes. This is, gentlemen, to use an IRA phrase, gentlemen, isn't this just the exact opposite of Lovey and Jonathan Banks? When Banks was playing well, and every time someone asked him about Banks, he would bring up that fraud from Sarasota.
Mike Jenkins. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was like, come on. This is just the opposite. This is the exact opposite. Where Banks led the team in picks, and Lovey couldn't wait to get rid of him.
They want so much, Steve, for Ryan Smith to make it. They're all in on Ryan Smith. You got to make it. You got to make it. But when we see him in practice and in the opener against the Bengals, he looks a little lost out there. And he's not a rookie. He's not a rookie.
Well, based on all the hype around Ryan Smith, I had stated many times, and now I'm starting to rethink my previous statements, that I thought cornerback might have been the deepest position on the team. Now I'm not so sure.
And, Steve, that's one of the reasons when you posed the question a couple of weeks ago about who's the indispensable buck once you get past Jameis Winston. My pick was Brent Grimes.
Oh, I thought it was Mike Evans.
No, I picked Grimes. Steve, I might have went with Donovan Smith by virtue of position, and I understand that. But mine was based on position because I think Hargraves has made a big move up.
He has.
But Steve, cornerback depth, it's a problem.
It's a question mark. I don't know if it's a problem. Look, Robert McClain, who we just talked about, the artist, he played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, was a starter for the Panthers once he was plucked off the street, started all the way through the playoffs, and he's been in this defense before, or he knows Mike Smith. He's had a good camp. He's not old, 28 or something like that, so solid veteran depth there. Josh Robinson never got a shot at corner for this team, but he's still there. He never played it last year.
Javion Elliott.
Which makes you wonder why he couldn't play in front of these other Alteron Werner, but he's still played all multiple positions at corner for 4 years with the Vikings. So you do have two veteran, legit corners on the roster. And Javian Elliott's been okay at nickel. They like his development. And they, you know, surely the defense was pretty good with Elliott on the field last year. So you got to give these young guys a chance to grow. So I'm not in a crisis mode, but, you know, Ryan Smith, if he isn't the player they thought, they got to go on the street and get a guy.
And turning to safety for a minute, Lee. Let's talk about Justin Evans for a minute, Lee. I'm going to say this right up front. If he doesn't improve significantly on his tackling skills and his technique, he's not going to be on the field.
Well, you can't tackle. What's the point?
You can't have a safety who takes bad angles and can't wrap up. I'm sorry.
And he's told me that to my face. I've asked him, you know, what do you need to improve on? Immediately, I got to work on my tackling.
And Steve, what was that, the knock on him coming out of college? And we've seen further evidence of it.
Yeah, and the Bucs acknowledge that. Now, first game, you know, you're getting used to the speed and all that stuff. You got to give the guy a little bit of a break.
Lee, when you get that guy one-on-one out in the flat, you got to make the tackle.
I'll quote directly from Mike Mayock. The instant Evans was drafted by the Bucs, selected by the Bucs, Mike Mayock said, "This guy will light you up, and he'll miss the tackle."
Or he'll miss the tackle.
And miss the tackle.
And Mayock, for those who don't realize, Mike Mayock, the NFL Network draft guru, he played defensive back in the NFL.
Giants.
So that's his thing. He's not like you know, some talking head or a guy who was a fullback. He understands what he's looking at. But you got to give Evans time. Evans deserves some time. And here's part of the thing, Ira, you know, which goes to this whole thing we're talking about. Tackling isn't really practiced very much in practice. They don't do real tackling, and that affects these guys. But Ryan Smith, they do real covering of receivers in many ways, a lot more than they get close to tackling in spring practice, in training camp. You know, they cover guys. You know, right? We saw Justin Evans for the first time go out and tackle, and he wasn't that great. But give him a little time. But the Bucs can afford to give him a year like they used, like Monty Kiffin used to do.
With Rondae Barber.
Give the guy a year to settle in. We'll teach him up and all that.
Gentlemen, at this juncture, Steve, I got to ask you to give me the floor for 45 seconds.
Please, take the floor.
Because I have a mea culpa. I made a mistake. I didn't misspeak. I miswrote. And I want to get it out there.
No, what, you used the Italian dressing with the beet salad?
No. I misspoke. And I think it's a credit to our readers because they were all over me. And you know what? They're right. I was wrong, and they're right. I said that the Bucs' first-string defense was stout against the Bengals, and I went back and I looked at it, and I looked at the play-by-play, and I looked at the video. The Bucs' first-string defense wasn't very good. Wasn't very good. What I took in was, well, they only scored 6 points at halftime, the Bengals. But the fact is, without Hargrave's interception, they probably go in for that score.
True.
Which was a fantastic individual play.
Great, yeah.
They were gashed on more than one occasion. First-string defense. Run defense didn't look any better than it did last year, which was marginal. So I want to apologize. I wrote that off the cuff. I should have looked a little bit harder. Buck first string defense, I don't think, had anything to crow about against the Bengals. So there it is. Your readers were correct, and I was wrong.
Ira, are you freaking kidding me? You're going to take away a interception in the red zone and not credit the defense? And say that was play it off
that,
as if
that,
it was,
that was a great individual play.
That's the
great
defense.
Great individual
good
play.
Ira. If the team was getting gashed and they would have scored before that play like that. Come on. You can't take that away. If Mike Smith was here, he'd say, Ira, that's how we draw it up. We play tight. When we tighten up in the red zone, we make the pick.
Lee, when they met Saturday morning and went over the film, and Mike Smith was in that defensive room, and McCoy is sitting there with Lavonnie David and Alexander, Ragtime Band and Chris Baker and Golston. I don't think they were getting plaudits from Mike Smith. Looking at it again, they weren't terrible, but I said they were stout. Isbits, must you be contrarian on every point? They were not stout.
I think you're doing yourself an injustice. All That's right. why taking an intercept.
Hats off to Hargraves. Fantastic play. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Hey, when the defense goes out on the field, Ira, what's their goal? Get the ball.
Get the ball.
They did
or
it.
Don't let them score.
And they did it. They did it. So I think you're being harsh. But the run defense actually 3.8 yards a carry, better than last year's average. Yeah, that's improvement, something to hang their hat on a little bit.
But we did see Mike Smith up in that booth. Now, I think that was mostly second half film because they had the backups in there. And Mike Smith's going, where the hell's the linebacker? What are you doing? You've been on it in misdirection. I don't think that was the first string defense, if I'm right. But you always said they got editing going on. Who knows when that was?
Creative editing.
So where are you? How was the first string defense?
They got the job done.
Was it
70 Steelers? No. Was it Lovey's Bucks? No. Okay. But they got the job done.
Okay. What are we looking for?
On that front, I wrote it up on JoeBucksFan.com. If the folks didn't see it, when I was at Jacksonville yesterday, I talked to Noah Spence. And I still have more from him. But coaches gave Noah Spence a C, letter grade of C.
Made some plays.
For that preseason game. He told me he missed run assignments. And
he did.
He continued to prove that he's just not there against the run. And Mike Smith told me that it's going to take reps. But I don't know where he's going to get the reps. Because if Golston and Ayers are healthy, they're going to be in there on first and second down. So no shame in Spence taking some time to develop.
How Beckwith look to you, Steve? Beckwith make some plays? Or do he look like a rookie?
They all look like rookies. I think all the rookies looked like rookies. All right, Ira, as we head toward the countdown here, we do have one more good thing to ask you. But EdmoresCadillacTampa.com, EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. I know that's in your favorites. That's your screensaver. You love going there to start your day, looking at all the opportunities, pre-owned.
You don't
Cadillacs.
Want to know what my screensaver is, Vinny. That's a whole other broadcast.
All right, baby. That's a good point. That's a good point, Ira. No wonder you need a new computer. You got all those viruses everywhere. all right. So, Sage of Tampa Bay, we did not ask you just the very most basic question. Thursday, you know, we're recording this a day in advance. Thursday night, Bucks play. Give us a few things you're looking for.
I got a very simple way to start it, Lee. And I don't want to hear contrarian isbits on this either. Four little words. Four beautiful words. You ready, DeKemper?
Where's the buffet?
Score some damn touchdowns.
Yep.
Score some damn touchdowns.
Especially with the first team offense.
Yeah. Now, Steve, I've already documented. Winston is a slow starter. This is not an opinion. This is based on 32 starts. He has 5 touchdown passes. I'll do the math, gentlemen. You know, that's 2.5 a year. You know, that's once every 6 games. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. Now, look, it's not all on Jameis Winston's shoulder. But, Steve, they get down to the 2-yard line against the Bengals. Punch it in. Get it in somehow, some way. Lee, the division with these quarterbacks and these offenses, and I mean you, Atlanta, and you, New Orleans, in particular, two of the three or four best offenses in football, New Orleans and Atlanta. Atlanta was number one last year. New Orleans is always in the top three, and they're going to continue to be while Drew Brees is under center. We know that. Doesn't mean they're going to win more than 8 games, but they're going to score their points. You can't beat them with field goals, gentlemen. You can't win those four division games with field goals, and Carolina's offense ain't too bad either if Cam Newton gets his head out of his ass, you know. So stop with the first quarter field goals. Score some touch. When's the last time the Bucks had a 14-0 lead after the first quarter?
I can't remember.
Yeah, you know, it changes everything. Steve, playing with a lead changes everything, puts so much pressure on the other team, especially if you're playing at home. So that's what I'm looking for up in Jacksonville. Go kick a little Dante Fowler ass over there, Jalen Ramsey. Put them in their place. Show them who the best team in Florida is.
14-0 first quarter lead.
Boy, it's been a long time.
Had to be Chucky days.
Been a long time, gentlemen.
I don't think it was Raheem because they always started slow. I don't think it was Shiano. Sure
as hell
wasn't Lovey.
And if they get a 10-0 lead, most likely it was a defensive touchdown. you know what I'm saying?
Well,
start better. Start faster.
Not just start better and faster, but the excuses are over with. If people think, and there are some people, we both know there are people out there that think Doug Martin is the second coming of Franco Harris. He's not, but they think that. If Doug Martin is just that kind of running back, and you got DeSean Jackson, and O.J. Howard, and Cam Bray, and Mike Evans, and Jameis Winston, there's zero excuse not getting a touchdown in the first quarter. None.
And part of it might be on Cutter. You got to call better plays.
Yeah, look, Cutter knows how to start fast. Look, the Bucks in D.C., what were they up, 21-0, I think, in the Capitol collapse a couple of years ago? They were all over the Eagles where they beat him. They were up like 38-0. So he's done it before, but it does, I believe, come back to Jameis because the consistency and the slow starts is there from him. Now, Ira, just a very quick answer. Mike Evans says Shaquille O'Neal, third best player of all time in basketball. Now, you appear with Chris Mad Dog Russo on Sirius Mad Dog.
I consider myself a bit of an NBA historian.
Sirius XM Mad Dog Radio. You're on all through football season, but you hit all kinds of topics. Primetime Wednesdays, 5 o'clock. I heard you're coming back again to do the
absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely. So I believe it's September 6th, maybe.
This is something that might come up with Russo, this kind of thing. So I'll give you a little warm-up. Shaq, number three all time.
Come up with Russo. I'm going to talk to Mike Evans about it next time I see him. Let me put it like this.
You guys have talked about this before in Russo's show.
Shaq O'Neal. Look, I got nothing to say negative about Shaquille O'Neal. His playoffs are extraordinary. Extraordinary. And his regular season ain't too bad. But, Steve, I'll put it like this. Short and sweet. Mike, you showed... You showed that you're a kid, you know, that the NBA started in 1990. It didn't. Lee, I'll throw it out there right now. O'Neal, you're the fourth best center in NBA history, not the third best player. Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I don't even think Shaq would argue against that. So, Mike, there's been a lot of great NBA players before you got on God's green earth. Do a little research. Check out the videos. Bill Russell's got 11 rings. 11. When Shaq's got more than 5, come talk to me.
What was your top 4 again?
He didn't give a top 4.
No, centers. Russell, Wilt, and Kareem.
For center. Okay, center.
Russell, Wilt, and Kareem. Okay. I mean.
Just curiosity. Top 4 NBA.
Players of all time?
All over. The whole, you know, yeah.
Jordan 1. Russell as the ultimate winner.
Fair.
Magic.
Yep.
And LeBron's coming on strong.
More so than Bird.
Close.
Okay.
Arguable. LeBron's not even
Jerry
finished
West.
Yet. Top 10.
Not top 5.
Oscar. Top 10.
Yes, Oscar Robertson. Yep.
Mike, you ever heard of Oscar Robertson, Mike? Hell of a player.
Average
the triple-double.
Didn't you go to high school with his father?
Never mind that. We're out of here. We're out of here, baby.
All right, Kaufman. Let me just throw in Magic. Magic played all the positions on the field, on the court as well, including what is a rookie, I believe. He stepped in at center in the NBA championship.
He did, against my Sixers.
Game 7, right?
Game 6.
None of those guys can top that when you're talking about
player. When Larry Bird says Magic was better than I was, that means something. For Bird to say that, and he does say that.
Yeah, that's what Roy says about you. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast, baby.
All right, Kaufman, get the hell out of here. Do your thing. We will see you next week.